Cap Figure Podcast, episode 18. Before we start, I'm going to play a clip from when I was interning at ESPN Radio on the Max Kellerman Show with Brian Kenny. I had no idea we were on air.
What intern, guys? Someone. Anyone. Who's the intern
There's
today?
There's 10 people in there.
No one will answer me.
No one will answer you. There's like 10 guys
people.
In there.
Someone answer me. Get in my head, folks. Get on the air. Anyone. Give me a verbal at Lumberg.
Ryan Dunn.
I'm not sending Dunn on breakfast runs. Dunn has talent. Dunn has talent. He doesn't have to go on breakfast runs. Sit down, Dunn. You just write some rhymes. Don't worry about breakfast runs. That's for the untalented. Ryan, can you rap?
For the unmotivated.
You can rap? Let me hear you rhyme, Ryan. Get on the mic. Go ahead.
When I come through, your whole block is blessed. If I had a sister and did her, that'd be incest. Cheer,
all right,
cheer.
That's enough from Brian. I mean, from Ryan. Ryan, careful what you wish for. This is why you have to go on breakfast
runs. This is why he has to go get food.
Yeah, now.
Oh, my God.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best.
So, yo, yeah, I just got emailed those clips from my friend Sam. Cap Figure Podcast, episode 18. Y'all had no idea we were on air. I thought we were joking around because they were talking about who's going to go get breakfast and stuff. I had no idea we were on air. And then I've been waiting for him to ask me to freestyle. And then they cut me off. It was pretty bad. I got in trouble. Later, I got called into the general manager's office of the station. And he's like, "What was that? You know we work for Disney." He's like, "If we get too many letters, there's nothing I can do, blah, blah, blah." Like he was the most typical suit douchebag ever. But that was really fun.
Yeah, I was going to say that was on AM radio.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. What? I mean, you may have just... That could definitely offend the...
Oh, you mean because you mean like AM radio, meaning like anybody could access it. It's not like satellite or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like the old school way of it, like the Don Drapers of the world sitting in their corner offices. Don't you dare shout out any profanities.
Oh my gosh, incest. Well, I never. It's like
it's a good thing our generation is free from those burdens. Because of podcasts.
Us? Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. And online, every porn video is tagged incest, taboo, for some reason. I don't know anybody who's searching that, but you notice how all these porn videos will have the tag, like...
Yeah, yeah, they just rename every other video.
It's like a regular video. The plot is like a teacher and a student, and they call it incest, because I guess that's what people are searching. It's pretty messed up. So, anyway, Cap Figure Podcast, episode 18. I'm Ryan DiPaolo. That's Tom McLaughlin.
Shout out to all my folks.
Shout out to Max Kellerman and to Brian Kenny, who only co-hosted that show for a little bit. And I wish I liked baseball more then, because like I really mostly only liked football. But they would get into legit dork, like sabermetric talk, like before it was popular, because this was 08, 07. And it was interesting to me a little bit, but not nearly as much as it would have been now. Like, I wish that show was on still.
Yeah, and Max Kellerman is just the best.
They're a good combo. Like now that I know Brian Kenny's persona more, as like they're both funny. Like Max has a little more troll flavor than Brian, right? But like,
yep,
it's really good. So anyway, yo, the show, bro, the show. The Cubs won. You were wrong about the series, which is my first thought watching that Game 7. How do you feel?
I mean, I kind of figured you would feel that way.
No, but seriously, yo, that was crazy, man. Try to remember, because it ended, when was that, Game 7? Like,
it was the second,
couple
so
days
5
ago,
days ago.
So, yeah, 5 days ago. Like, really, like, try to remember how insane that was. Like,
I do.
I was sitting there, there's so much to get to about the game. And the last 2 days, like, we thought you thought the Indians were going to win Game 6. The last episode we recorded was before Game 6. And you were like, you know, I bet the Indians can win tonight, and then that'll be that. But I thought that it would go Indians, I mean Cubs, then Indians, whatever. I thought that the chalk would be like Arrieta wins, and then Kluber's favored. He wasn't even favored though going into Game 7, even though it was a toss up. But yo, Game 7, that was so insane. Like,
I think it was the greatest baseball game in history. I mean, definitely the greatest World Series playoff game
well,
in
let's just say
recent
what
history.
You watched, because I wasn't alive for the Giants won the pennant. I didn't see Babe Ruth's called shot. It's pretty arrogant of you to say that.
Yeah, I mean, until we can start seeing footage of that kind of stuff, which is not available. But, yeah, I think it was the greatest game I've ever watched.
Yeah, say that because, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, even Game 6, the Cardinals-Rangers, was a better game, actually, because they were down to their last strike twice. Like, that was crazier.
Yeah, I mean, but if you look at the grand narrative of what was going on with two teams with the really
well, we
ridiculous
don't need to debate. It
curses.
Was amazing. No, dude, it was amazing for so many reasons.
And,
like,
the, you know, the rain delay right before the 10th inning, it was just perfect.
All of it. Yeah, that added to it. So, like, I mean, I guess in order, like okay, so what like, where do you even start with the game? One, I would start with, like, Aroldis Chapman, right? Like, everybody said it after Game 6, and by everybody, I mean all my friends, Pete Rose, A-Rod, were like, yo, why are you using him when you're blowing them out? If he's you've been already pushing him, he's going to be tired, and that came back to bite them, right? Like, what's number one for you, like, just before we delve into either?
I think the moment that really sticks out to me is exactly that, even though they lost the Rajai Davis at-bat, because when he was up, you know, all of those storylines, like you were saying with Chapman, there was all of that question before the game. He came in, and even before Davis was up to bat, you can just kind of tell that Chapman, they were seeing the ball well against him.
Yeah. Carlos Santana basically walked against him, but he didn't in his at bat. That was in the next inning, I think. Actually.
Yeah, it was the next inning. But, like, you know, Lindor and Napoli had great at-bats against him. And, you know, they were fouling the balls, you know, right behind the plate, right on those pitches. And then the Davis at-bat, I think, may have been the best at-bat of, you know, the entire season. Just being able to, like, fight off those pitches, to lay off. I remember it was a 2-2 count. And Chapman threw an amazing slider in the dirt. And when you're waiting for 100 up in the zone, and there's that slider, that is not an easy pitch to lay off
of. Well, he threw a bunch in a row, though. Like, he was tired. Because he was tired, they were saying, and it's probably true, that he kept going slider, and he shook off Contreras a couple times. Or I think that's who was in that. But because I guess he just didn't have it in him to go high and throw 100. But yeah, I mean, but Rajai Davis also, like, screwed up the game. Like, he's in there for his defense after Tyler Nyquin or whatever messed up, you know, the day before. And he, on the tag up play, which before he hit the home run, the tag up play was the play of the game for me, you know, obviously up until that point, because it was so big. Like,
oh, when he missed the cutoff guy. Yeah.
No, he didn't miss the cutoff guy. He delayed. He caught it and hesitated. Mm. And Rajai Davis, he caught it and he threw it straight home. It was just so shallow that he, like, hesitated. Like, he wasn't ready. He wasn't expecting Chris Bryant to tag up.
Yeah.
You don't remember the play I'm talking about?
I do. I do know what you're talking about.
He hesitated for a second. He was, like, lax. Like, he forgot the situation. He 100% gave up that run because it was almost shocking that he went. It was aggressive base running and, like, good by the third base coach to send him because it was so shallow. And he had to run real far to make the play. But, like, that's literally a play you should make. You're in there for your defense. Then the other one was when I forget who hit it over his head and
yeah, he just misread the ball off
the
bat.
And he misread the ball, right.
Yeah, I don't think that in particular, though, sticks out to me. I couldn't really blame Davis for losing that game. No,
but that's a huge game-changing play.
It
is. In a game that ends up being one run.
It is.
Like, when he should have got him out, and he's in there for his defense, and he had a bad defensive game.
It is, but I think that when you look back at this game, I think the moment people are going to remember is them tying it and then sending it to extra innings.
No, okay, you dingus. No, duh. Obviously, that's what everybody remembers. But like, you know, you got to go back to every run scored and think about, like, what could be different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just because you want to have the access to Rajai Davis, like, doesn't mean you need to kiss his ass. Like, he messed up. So, yeah, obviously, like, Hayward speech, right? They say that that one.
Yeah,
in
that's what switched it all around.
Yo, they really were saying that though. Like Anthony Rizzo and stuff was like.
I mean, they
don't know. He could believe that, but he like Rizzo said that. I don't think he's lying. I think he just doesn't.
You don't think it has more to do with just the fact that they were getting into the heart of the lineup?
Yeah, of course. I think it's because they're a better team.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's, I think that if you're in the moment, it's like every time there's a winner of the World Series, they're like, man, this team stuck together. We fought adversity. It's like, no, that doesn't matter as much as that. Like, you're all really good players, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So good. Hayward, you know, maybe we can say now that he earned his, what, like $35 million this year?
No way.
What's his name? Gave a great speech.
On the Effectively Wild podcast was saying he kept hoping to write the story of like Hayward making his contract worth it in the postseason, and every at bat he's waiting for him to get a hit to make that story like happen, and he just never did.
Yeah,
and
that's hilarious. He just has like a story like pre-written. Like,
yeah.
Jason Hayward facing adversity has come back, and
they all try to do that.
And then you watch that, you just watch his swing, and it is just atrocious.
Yo, he
I think I may have a better or more fluid swing at the moment than Jason Hayward.
Yo, what about the bunt? Like, do you think that was stupid? So just in case anybody somehow listens to this and doesn't know, it was less than two. It was one out, and Hayward got to third after stealing and then a bad throw by Yan Gomes, who unfortunately had to be in the game. Because Perez had been playing so well, even though Yan Gomes is their catcher, I guess. Anyway, so it's a bad throw, and he gets the third, and this is the top of the ninth. And then on a full count, he has Joe Maddon has Javier Baez try to do it. I don't know what the difference between a safety and suicide squeeze is. Do you?
I think the squeeze is just when you send the runner running before he even sees that it's down.
Oh, that's the suicide, and the safety is he reads it and then, like, sees?
Yeah. I don't understand that really at all, because Baez, I'm sure they know more about his abilities as a bunter, but, like, why didn't you just try and do that earlier in the count?
Yeah, well, I don't think he was at third until two strikes.
Oh, right. But still, yeah, I don't think you do that with two strikes. I think you just... I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
because
that's what happened. He had the ball. He stole with two strikes, and then it was the wild. But no, right. I agree. It's Javier Baez, who clearly can't bunt because he did a bad job.
And he strikes out a lot, so I can maybe understand that.
Right, that's
that.
The counter I was just going to say. Like, he's a guy who strikes out a lot, so I guess that's the other side of it. But, like, you have to trust him more to put a ball in play. But also, part of me feels like I want to be, like, an old man and be like, you got to get the bunt down there. How do you not be able to do that?
Yeah, the thing is, I mean... we all know this, but the game doesn't pay you to bunt. You know, the players are not being paid to bunt, so they're just not developing that part of their game.
That is so new school. I want to smack you right now. Not really. I love you, but that is this so, like, Frank Thomas or some stupid guy would say that on TV. You're very smart, but it's like, man, you don't get paid for home run. You get paid for your swag, bro. You don't get paid to do bunts or rebound. You don't get paid to do the hard work.
I mean, they should be able to do it, but
yeah, because they're being asked to do it. So I know what you're saying, but it's still. I mean, even Josh Donaldson is like an idiot. Like, was on TV, like, you only get paid for home runs. You look at the guys who get paid. But it could have won you a World Series game. So what about like putting Aroldis back out there? Like, that's pretty wild too, dude.
Yeah. It just doesn't really make sense to me. Maybe if Chapman was really pitching well, you could argue about putting him back out. But it was just very apparent from his first couple of pitches that, you know, the hitters were not being fooled with that high fastball, and they were right on his pitches.
Well, he wasn't even really throwing it that much. Like, he was just throwing sliders, basically, too. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't understand that. I think Maddon, and this is, like, a pretty widespread sentiment, he's a great manager, but in that game he did take a number of chances that, you know, if they hadn't won, they would not have looked that great on his
record.
Yeah,
they didn't even feel like chances. They felt like just, like, things he already predetermined, right? Like, like he knew, like Joe Buck, like they said, like knew that he was going to Leicester at some point, and mm-hmm. It's like Joe Maddon had already decided, no matter how good Hendricks was pitching, that he's going to go to John Lester.
Yep.
And then no matter what, he was going to go Hendricks, Lester, Aroldis, right? And same with like game six, like that, like he wanted Aroldis in for all those outs and like that's the counter argument is like the good side of him, like the comeback in game four of the divisional series against the Giants. He had every switch like in an inning which the Giants used five relievers. Joe Maddon had every single thing thought out ahead of time, like, oh, I thought they'd do this, then I would do this. And I don't know, maybe the same thought throughness hurt him in some respects. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's the other thing to take into consideration here is the Cubs. It was apparent that they didn't trust any other relievers other than Chapman and Montgomery.
Yeah,
like Carl Edwards, you know, he came in and he got the save in mm-hmm. this game, Carl Edwards. But I mean, they only went to him because they had to. It didn't seem like, you know, they were too happy to bring him in there.
Yeah, that's the other, yeah. I was going to say, Joe Maddon trusts nobody on the team, obviously, like, besides him. Carl Edwards looks like an alien, yo. I don't know how he,
Slim Jim?
Yo, he's going to
He's like
break
Gumby.
It. It's crazy. It's creepy, man.
He looks like Gumby.
So, and then, yeah, I mean, I guess the Indians did all they could. So their luck ran out, right? Like, we were saying their path, the Indians' path to winning this would be, like, we were just like, after Kluber had such a great playoff to this point, we were just like chalking Kluber in for great starts all three games, right? Both you and I. But like, I guess you get tired eventually. Like, and so, you know, that was the path though. Like, steal one other bullpen game with one of your other weaker starters and then win three Kluber games, which is easier said than done when he's, you know, playing like Hendricks / Lester / Chapman. But, he didn't strike anybody out. He just was tired, huh, Kluber? Like, he just ran out.
He just didn't have the same sort of control over both sides of the strike zone that he did in his other two starts and even back to the games in the NLCS. I think the first game he pitched this series was probably his best start ever, period. And that's for a Cy Young Award winner from the year before. But yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily he was totally tired, if the Cubs just, they were hot. Coming into that game, they scored a ton of runs in game six, and some of the crucial hitters, you know, you could tell were just really timed in, like Bryant,
what does
Rizzo.
That mean, they're hot? Do you believe in that?
I mean, I think that it becomes sort of a situation where you start pressing if you go a couple of games without scoring runs. So.
Yeah, I guess I believe in the reverse of hot, but I mean, I don't really think momentum exists. Do you? Like, I think it's just they started playing well, or like that it just happened. Like, I don't
know. So that's sort of the same thing as what I'm
just
saying.
I guess so. It's like they were just hot. Like when does momentum start or end or whatever? It's just random. By the way, Carl Edwards just got the save. I mean, he got a hold. Aroldis got the win, which is really funny, the way baseball works. But, Hendricks couldn't get it, I guess. I guess with the Hendricks decision, it's better to take somebody out earlier than later.
But he was pitching so well.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. I don't think I would have. And then to put John Lester in with guys on base, I mean, I wish they tested him more. You know, they kept like messing with him and then running back to the bag and stuff. Like,
yep.
I guess it's scary because he's staring at you because he's a lefty, but still.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I remember in not the game seven start, but the previous start that he made, there was a moment where Lindor had a huge lead. Rizzo normally wouldn't even hold runners on, but was at that point. And Lindor, like, just kind of like spazzed, and Lester definitely could have picked him off.
Right.
But you could tell that it was almost like Lester was using reverse psychology to kind of mess with the timing of the runners from the Indians.
And even aside from that, like what Joe Maddon told Lester and what Terry Collins told Noah Syndergaard with his giving up steals is like, don't worry that much about it. Your job is the guy at the plate, you know? And I guess, what, they had a... How much of a lead did they have? They had a couple-run lead when Lester was coming in.
Yep.
Dude, it was just crazy. And then also the fact that, what's his name, Mike Martinez or whatever, he was their last batter.
Yeah.
Because they, in the situation where Baez ended up bunting, right, it was the same spot. It was to prevent, it was in the ninth.
Yep.
With a guy on third and less than two outs, and he came in as basically a pinch thrower.
Yeah, for the arm.
And the ball didn't even get hit to him, and he had to take Coco Crispow. Yeah, Michael Martinez.
Yeah, and Crisp had two hits earlier in the game.
Yeah, yeah, no, that sucks. But, you know, there's no room. I can't criticize Terry Collins at all. You know, they just ran
Terry
out of...
Terry Collins?
Terry Collins.
Tito.
I can criticize him a lot. Yeah, so...
Yeah, Francona. I just think that decision was a little bit weird, too. I know that he... I'm sure Michael Martinez has a much better arm, but I didn't see Baez hitting the ball to right field all that much.
Well,
in that series.
Maybe, I guess the fear is like that on the one home run he had hit, it's like he finally adjusted and went the other way and stopped trying to pull it. And if he's going to do what he was told and actually put a ball in play, then he's going to be waiting on it and not pulling it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's a very specific scenario. But then again, if you don't get a good arm there, you lose the game. I don't know, dude. It just sucks that Rajay Davis, even though he hit that home run, he really messed the game up. Also, it might become more practice. They were talking about this, that the tag up from first on the
deep fly ball.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That, I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's awesome. I do that all the time when I'm playing the show.
Yeah, me too.
Albert Almora. But like, yeah, I don't understand why it doesn't happen more in baseball. I guess because you have to prepare if they drop it. But, like, you saw the Royals do that last year a lot, right? They took very ballsy tag-ups, and it worked for them all postseason.
I agree, especially in the context of when that's the first out,
right,
getting that runner to second. Because not only do you get a runner to scoring position, but you take out of the possibility of a double play.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think your win probability added from taking that chance in almost, like, what, 85-90% of circumstances, you're going to end up getting that runner there.
You mean, oh, right, yeah. And what's the percentage chance that he drops it and then you don't get to go to third or home? It's like...
That doesn't... Yeah.
Narrow. But I guess the counter argument for going halfway would be that, like, the few times that the guy doesn't catch it, you can score if you're halfway, right?
Maybe.
But that's so few of a percentage time that it's like...
Yeah,
it's still worth it to go 90%. I'll be in scoring position. So,
and if he does drop it, right, then there's still either only going to be one or zero outs. So being at third base is not necessarily like, you know, you still have a very good chance of getting that run in.
But if
with
he's
one
waiting
or no
on
outs.
First until he misses it, he still might. He might only make it to second.
Okay, yeah.
But either way, he's going to. But still, you're right. I mean, whatever. Then it's zero outs, and you can get him over. So anyway, all right. So, like, I don't know. What do you think? Like, are the Indians? I guess they have Andrew Miller for another year. Like, do they have a chance to be back here next year? Like, I mean. They kind of like went for it to some extent by trading for Andrew Miller and what's it called? I don't know what I was gonna say. Help me.
I mean, they tried to trade for Luke Roy, and he backed out of that trade. I don't know. I don't see them necessarily back here next year. I think that they're gonna be in the conversation for the division. And
yeah, they
I think
feel
they
interchangeable
may...
with any lucky team that, to some extent, that got good pitching for a year and went on a run, you know?
Yeah, and I think that when you look at the way that their roster was constructed and how they kind of approached the trade deadline, this year in and of itself I think is like sort of a great template as to how a smaller market team can end up winning a World Series. Same kind of, they obviously didn't win, but making that deep run, which is, you know, you get a couple of starting pitchers in place, which everyone tries to do, or you just, you know, you capitalize when you can. You're not building a team that's going to be getting in that spot every single year, but the Indians went all in. They haven't been to the playoffs a couple of years. But I think that it was a number of factors too. Like, they were very healthy all year. I think that, you know, they can definitely stand to upgrade a few positions, but they're not going to be bringing in any, you know, huge impact players this offseason. They've kind of depleted their farm system. So I just don't see them being able to repeat. And
but at least they're pitching, like, if Carrasco and Salazar return and they're okay, like, at least that's much, like, in a lot of ways, like, the postseason version of their team ended up being similar to the Royals as far as, like, well, not really with the defense anymore, but with, like, you know, base running and a solid lineup that has, like, a lot of good batters that are not, you know, whatever. Like, that was the postseason version of their team. But the reason I like them better than I would have liked the Royals after last year is because, like, their starting pitching could be okay. But
definitely,
who knows? It's dumb luck. They on the Effectively Wild podcast, again, they were pointing out that, like, the Indians had built this team, and then the two signings that they went to spend some free agent money, they totally got unlucky on or blew it with Nick Swisher giving him, like, $56 million.
Yep.
And Michael Bourne, who Mets fans wanted, who had, like, a bunch of, like, four-win seasons, and then he gave them four wins in, like, 3 years. So it's sort of random. Like, the Indians feel interchangeable, whereas the Cubs are like...
Same with the Yan Gomes signing. They still have him for a couple more years, and they're paying him like a top five catcher.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's based off of the one, you know, 2-3 years ago he was.
Hit a bunch of home runs.
Yeah. Well, any he had a good year. But no, still, I know. I mean, Roberto Perez played well. Like, and Tyler Nyquin hopefully will be better. I like him. I mean, you have a center fielder, a second baseman, and a shortstop, right? I don't know.
Oh, definitely.
Kipnis maybe only has, like, 2 years left of like, control or something. I'm not even sure, but
Have the pieces in place, and if they get Brantley back, you know, that's another bat. I would say they're the favorites in their division.
Yeah, but you got to be really depressed if you're an Indians fan. I would kill myself almost, like, because you live in Cleveland, right? You don't have a job. Like, all the factories are closed. Like, LeBron James is pretty old. Life is pretty bad for you. It's cloudy. It gets dark at, like, 5 p.m. now this time of year. I don't think things are looking good. If you're in Chicago, on the other hand, you get to riot. You get to gloat like a douchebag. You get to think that deep dish pizza is better than New York pizza. And, you know, and you get to think that, like, you know, Theo brought you this, whereas he could have just got lucky. I mean, I'm kind of being facetious, but...
No, I mean, the Cubs, they... Look, I mean, I think I was definitely of the belief that if they didn't win the World Series this year, I think they're going to have one in the next couple of years. There's, you know, always injury risk. There's always not living up to the performances. They're in a tough division, but this team is really constructed to, you know, put together a string of a couple of years because they are just so strong in every facet of their roster. They have the flexibility to pay people as they grow older. But, you know, their best players, really, they have control over for, you know, 4.5 years left in the case of Bryant. Rizzo, you have another 3 years. Addison Russell, you have 4 years. Contreras,
Baez, yeah.
You have 5.5. Baez, you have 4. I mean, these guys are all going to be paid pennies on what their actual value is worth. So, you know,
Fowler, they got a great discount on for the next couple of years compared to his market value.
Well, he's actually going to be a free agent again this year.
Wait, they just signed him for 1 year?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they matched the years of the Orioles deal.
No, he had a player option, but he's obviously going to opt out of that because he's going
to... Oh, I didn't realize he had a player option.
But...
Yeah, you know, he way is going to get paid. He way outperformed that.
Yeah, center fielder, switch hitter. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back with the Cubs.
Yeah, because they can afford it. That's the thing, like, with Theo is, like, it's super impressive. Anybody who wins anywhere is awesome, but I don't really care that he overcame that long of a drought. Like, that's just, like, kind of random. But if you have a franchise who's willing to pay, like, the Red Sox or the Cubs, it's, like, it really helps a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Billy Bean has his clout, rightfully so, because he's doing it with, like, peanuts compared to these teams. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And obviously, Theo is amazing. All right. So, like, you know, the Indians, how much more money do you think they, like, could they have bought another free agent if they had won? Like, how much money does an actual winning a World Series, like, get you more? Or, like, does it depend if the owner wants to pocket it or reinvest it? Like, yes. What are the financials of winning or losing a World Series?
So that's what I was kind of getting at. Who benefited more from making it this far into the playoffs between the Cubs and the Indians? And
you're saying just by getting to the World Series, who benefited more?
Yeah, or even by winning.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's say...
Well, they both didn't win, so you mean who would have benefited more by winning?
Sure, who would have benefited more from winning? And it's clearly the Indians. The Cubs, you have to take everything in context here, right? The Cubs are fifth in overall team valuation at $2.2 billion, and the Cubs have just been on an upswing for a couple of years. You know, they rebuilt the ballpark. They have
stable, in a great city. They have great fans.
Great ownership. Yeah, their fans are, outside of maybe the Cardinals, the most loyal fan base. And, you know, they just they have all of the infrastructure in place, and the marginal revenue that I think they're going to generate from winning this World Series is not as great as you would think. And
you mean as far as just in overall, or as far as like how much they're more they're going to be willing to put into the team? Like, what do you mean?
Well, I would say both. I think that their value is not going to increase that drastically from winning the World Series, because
what I'm asking is, like, how much does the you're saying the value of the team, but I don't know if that necessarily equates to how much their payroll is or not.
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
Okay, go on.
And so
say you're mad at me. If you're mad at me, we gotta do this out. Tell me I'm being a dick. Yell
you
at
are
me.
Being a dick.
All right, I'll shut
you
up and listen.
You have been the whole episode. So
I'm sorry. I have been.
The Cubs, you know, they're going to sell T-shirts. They're going to, you know, sell promotional videos. They're going to have a nice little logo to put on all of their tickets and marketing material for the next 10 years. But how many more season ticket holders do you think they're actually going to get?
Yeah.
They can increase the prices of their tickets, but they could have done that anyway.
No,
because
that's a
really
they
have
good
a young,
point.
Exciting team in a phenomenal city. It's a pretty good economy. The Cubs are very cool. Now, this has not been something that has happened overnight. They have great fan loyalty, but that whole sort of process was coming in place. New ownership hires Theo Epstein, puts in the money to rebuild, you know, or to renovate the stadium, the player locker rooms, and, you know, they start really sort of building that franchise and dynasty that they're building. Whereas the Indians are a totally different story. You know, you have a team that they've been in the bottom five of the payroll in terms of player salary expenses the last two seasons. The last 2 years, they've also had the second worst attendance numbers in the league.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, the Cubs were worth $2.2 billion. Obviously, the Indians are going to be less. They're worth $800 million. But out of 32 major league teams, they're 27th, and they were the only team over the past 2 years to actually lose value.
The Indians?
Yeah, they went down 3% in value. And, you know, one of the things that's very interesting and sort of compelling in this is the Indians are going to be able to sell all of those tickets to new fans. They're probably going to get a lot more corporate sponsors. There's just going to be, you know, more interest in the team, which equates to more dollars from that direct route. But the Indians have a very, very bad local television contract, and they signed it into place in 2013. So, you know, that's where you see a lot of the teams generating their huge revenue from. And the Indians, you know, they're kind of locked into a deal that they signed in 2013 that was sort of valuing, you know, what they could bring into in terms of like ad sales. That they were valuing them as a team that was terrible in 2013. So they really don't have the ability to renegotiate that until 2022.
Well, I mean, how much worse could they be evaluated than the second least valuable franchise? Wait, you said 27th least valuable?
Yeah, they're the 27th.
Even if they got a horrible deal, I guess it can't be that much worth. I mean, still, though, obviously, if they were to re-sign it today, they're worth more than they were. Like, no, like right. this is the first success that they've had in a while, the Indians, besides, like, those short two playoff appearances in the last decade.
Definitely.
So that makes sense.
Their upside and what they won by even making it this far, more so if they had won the World Series, you know, they're going to benefit way more.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I forgot about, I'm sorry, I have been being a dick. See this? We work stuff out here on the Cap Figure podcast, you know?
Psychology.
So the Indians, the Cubs, it's like, yeah, how many more season ticket holders can you really get when you have this, like, full, you're selling out? I mean, they're great fans. That's a really good point.
I think that one of the other things with the Indians was just, like, the public sentiment of that team has gone downhill. Mm-hmm. You know, like, their owner bought the team in 2000, and that was, you know, he paid a lot of money at the time, which was, I think, something like $300 million. He's obviously made a ton of money off that investment, but that was a lot at the time. But, you know, people just, second worst attendance, they haven't been wanting to go to the games. They don't have that, like, superstar player, say, like a Bryce Harper, to bring people in. Cleveland's economy has been very rough. And, you know, like, before this season, actually, their owner, who had owned the entirety of the team, sold a pretty large stake, something like 35% to 40% of the team, which that just never really looks good. Mm. It kind of shows that he doesn't have faith in this team turning it around.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to sell off part of the team right before you think they're about to go on a huge winning streak.
Well, or even turning it around financially, right? That right. also could mean that even if he did believe that they were going to, even if somehow he did foresee the success, he still might want to sell it. If, like, if say this attendance doesn't change that much after a good run like this, you know, you could just be, just by the fact that you're in that market, just be like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make that much money. I mean, yeah. That's what they said about the Pittsburgh ownership forever, that they just would just, like, pocket revenue sharing and try to win as best they could, you know, and, like, that, like, you know, it's part of what makes baseball so interesting is that it's, like, so capitalist. And, like, part of it, though, it's, like, the Cubs do deserve to have a bigger payroll and a better team because they have more fans. Like, Max Kellerman put
Absolutely.
Me onto this point. Like, I used to think, like, oh, it's unfair. Like, I like football so much better with the salary cap. And, like, obviously, it's better for the players. But really, like, the Yankees or something, the Cubs deserve to have more fans and more money. I mean, deserve to have more money because they make more people happy when they win. And so it's like a straight, like, correlation, right? Like, to some degree. Unless the owner is, like, really meddling, like the old Dodger owner who was horrible before this new group and, like, just didn't respect the fans and the money at all. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, just all of everything that you can see, like, you know, the Cubs have just been, if we think about, like, that stock market example of, like, the arrows going up and down, like, the Cubs kind of bottomed out, like, what, 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. but they didn't really bottom out, but just relative for them, and everything has been uphill since then. Like, the Indians, what this did was it kind of just maybe even at worst flattened out, like a free fall. And I don't feel bad for anybody that owns a Major League Baseball team, but the Indians really needed this.
Well, it's good now, thinking about it, like, from this perspective too. It's like, it's good that they didn't go all in and get the Luke Roy. I mean, I guess they were so close to winning the World Series that maybe if they did have Luke Roy, they could have won. And then it's like, this is why I often don't like having these conversations after a team wins the World Series, because it feels like, what's the ends? It's like, makes me, every time there's a champion, I like philosophically like question, like, what's it all for? If, like, the day after a championship, ESPN is like, so what's for next year? And I'm like, oh my God, if the Jets or the Mets win a World Series, or am I going to be like the next day? Like, well, okay, what's next?
Yeah. And
like, is it never enough?
That's where you kind of have that clash between, like, you know, wanting to, I'm not going to say naive, but, like, you want to be a fan and really like soak in and appreciate those like great moments. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's just a business. And
oh my God,
to them, each time that they, you know, make a deep playoff run or maybe even say like win a World Series, there are financial impacts behind that. And
well, that's the only reason they want to win, the owners.
In most cases, yes.
Unless you're George Steinbrenner and you're like awesome and like just happen to be the most gangster owner, that you're so crazy that you would eat babies to win.
But most of the time, winning and making money do kind of go hand in hand. So at least there's not a totally dark, cynicist kind of plot going on.
So we only got like a little, like 5 minutes left. But Pete Rose got better as the playoffs went on. Like I loved actually during the rain delay. Frank Thomas was horrible. Like,
oh,
like,
he's the worst,
dude. He was so bad. They were trying to discuss stuff like who has the easier decisions to make coming up. Joe Maddon or Tito Francona, and Pete Rose and A-Rod tried to answer, and then Frank Thomas goes, you know, whoever wants it more is gonna win. That's the bottom line. And it's like, what? You're on TV getting paid to say that, you retard?
Yeah, or like, both of them have tough decisions. I don't know. I'm glad I'm not the one making them.
What a hole. That's what they call it on the Opie and Anthony show. When there's a woman who's forced into a morning zoo radio format, and you like throw a topic to them, and they go, well, we'll just have to wait and see.
You just
ended the conversation. You're the hole.
It doesn't have to be a woman, just a disclaimer.
No, the hole usually is. Anti-disclaimer. But Frank Thomas is a very man.
Yeah, it's just a really...
Yo, so bad. He's just like, well, we'll just have to see. Whoever wants it more is going to win. It's like, dude, get off TV.
And we were talking about this last time. I mean, how much better would it be if you had, say, like Eric Burns, Mark DeRosa, Harold Reynolds, just anybody who actually has some opinion?
Yeah.
Even if it's wrong?
Yeah.
But yeah, so, the winter GM meetings actually started today, and there's free agency right around the corner. So maybe... I can drop some little pieces of knowledge.
Yeah, tell me tell me your pieces of knowledge.
I'll give you the market overview. So
your little poop nuggets of knowledge.
I mean, this is a very weak, very weak free agent class, and that is sort of on the heels of what is going to be an amazing free agent class in the next few seasons.
Well, part of that is probably Hanka Strasburg signed in the season, right? That made it a lot less juicy, but.
And, I mean, for certain buckets, like, yeah, starting pitching, I mean, it's very bare. And a lot of the players that are actually becoming available as free agents are, I mean, it's weird to say older, but they are. Like, Edwin Encarnacion, Cespedes, Dexter Fowler, Justin Turner. It's overall a very weak free agent class. So what I think is going to happen a lot this offseason is I think that there are going to be bigger trades than signings. And I think that you're going to continue to see teams capitalizing on value from favorable contracts like Chris Sale, Chris Archer, I think are both going to be moved. You know, we keep talking about those names at the deadlines, like, oh, when is Chris Archer going to be traded? How much are they going to get for him? And I think now is exactly the perfect time for those teams to trade them because you just don't actually have any options on the free agent market that can come even close to that.
Yeah, like if you're a team that can afford it and you want to get good quick, right? Or like you're the Dodgers or the Yankees and you want pitching. That's a good point. So wait, those are the biggest position player free agents? Is it Edwin Encarnacion and...
You got Justin Turner, Dexter Fowler, Ian Desmond.
Oh, Ian Desmond, yeah. I wonder who's going to get paid the most of them. Probably Ian Desmond, right?
Well, he's 31 as well. I would say
I mean, most free agents are in baseball are going to be at the best age possible is what? Like 28? Like if you come up... At like 22 is the earliest you could realistically come up on average, right? And then 6 years later, you're 28. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, and I'm only saying that because of the backdrop of the players that are coming available.
Right. No,
years.
No, I
like
understand.
You have
like
Machado.
And, yeah, gods. Like, yeah. Or
but,
even what could have been Strasburg this year, right?
Exactly.
He's 28.
And, yeah, so It's just that it's a weak free agent class relative. Last year, I think, was also a weak free agent class. I mean, Jason Hayward was, I think, like, what, the big name? And,
yeah, and then Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, and, you know, so Jose Bautista is also a free agent. But, you know, in terms of, like, real impact players, I mean, I think Cespedes is probably the best player that will be available. And it'll be interesting because I think that the overall sentiment among the teams that generally do spend a lot of money in the free agent market is that they're all just waiting for the next couple of years, and they're trying to, you know, kind of not get themselves locked in at any positions or for any large amounts of money because, you know, quite frankly, any of the teams that are going to sign any of those players I mentioned are probably going to overpay just because they're the top part of the market.
Yeah.
So
also a new thing in recent years is like the teams worrying about the compensation pick, and like the players union really needs to address it, and they want to, but like I never really heard about it before the last couple years. I guess teams are realizing, I guess maybe with amphetamines being banned, which is Mike Francesa's interesting theory, just that youth matters more than it used to. But whatever the case, it's like, you know, it hurts offers. Like it's crazy to think back that, like, Yoenis and Ian Desmond are on one-year deals, even though, they you know, Yoenis was with an opt-out and whatever.
Even Fowler.
Yeah, Fowler, exactly. And like, I mean, so that, and, like, Daniel Murphy's deal, even, like, last year, was way lower than it should have been, so.
Yeah, and that's...
That makes sense. I mean, I guess it suits it that teams would all sit back and wait. Like the Yankees, probably what? They're just going to eat it until they can buy Bryce Harper next year? Like, is that what people think? Or
I would say that's probably the case. And or what you could see the Yankees do, and I think that they're going to do, is I think the Yankees are going to be one of those teams in the Chris Sale sweepstakes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because they've just, you know, they've stocked up enough players. And yeah, their farm system, I think everybody agrees, is like the deepest and has the highest end talent in, let's say, the American League.
That's crazy. I keep forgetting that
it's
you
so
that
weird.
Changed during the year. I know.
So weird. But at a certain point, like, you know, we have this guy, Gleyber Torres, who's our top shortstop prospect. I mean, we have a starting shortstop, so one of those two has to go.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Yankees are going to be one of the – they're going to try and consolidate their above-average players into great players because, you know, they're going to be able to sign Bryce Harper or Machado plus, you know, one of the many other – Josh Donaldson. They're going to get a couple of those guys. So, you know, those guys are going to need positions to go to. So for the Yankees, it's all about kind of just putting the best players in the other positions that they don't think they're going to get someone for. I don't know if that necessarily makes sense.
It does. No, it absolutely does. It's just hopefully you guys, your ownership doesn't get all antsy and like, you know, do another, I can't think of an example, like what the Indians did with Nick Swisher, or like sign like Batista to a longer term deal than you would want to make up for like Ellsbury. I don't know what I'm saying. You know,
agree. Yeah.
Like, just feel the pressure to win now.
I saw a something that the Yankees were one of the favorites, but you can't even
for Batista.
No, for Encarnacion.
Oh.
But you can't really take that. You have to take that with a grain of salt because in the internet age, every team is going to be a favorite for a player on some website.
Yeah, no, you're right. But, I mean, I guess he's a good fit because you have no Teixeira. Greg Bird is hopefully your first baseman, right? No Beltran.
Yeah, I think.
No A-Rod. Who do you need the DH spot for as much now?
Exactly. We lost about four or five DHs.
Now you get to have a literal DH like our debate. Recently, like, I mean, maybe you would rather have a guy who's versatile, right?
That's what I was going to say, is I think that maybe, and I don't know how much this matters to the front office, but Girardi's sort of, I guess, the way he manages games and the strategy he's used was to kind of try to use that DH spot to give people rest, so maybe they don't want to get fully tied into one DH, especially on the heels of having, you know, those couple of old players like A-Rod, Teixeira.
But maybe he doesn't have to manage. Maybe that's why he was managing like that, though,
sure.
Right? Maybe he doesn't have to do that anymore now without A-Rod and stuff and Teixeira and Beltran. And well, we had this debate, but it also got cut off because of our show, and we'll end in like 2 minutes. But I would rather have a straight up DH and not have that luxury and have like a however you want to phrase it. And like we discussed this, but like it's
a professional hitter.
Yeah, professional hitter. Like I'd rather have Carlos Santana instead of having like Ben Zobrist DH theoretically, even though it's so nice to have the luxury. And this is a Ben Zobrist. He's just a bad example. Like say Josh Harrison with no position to play in the field, right? But he can fill in at any spot and you can give any guy a day off. Like, if your team is younger, like, I guess, with Didi and Starlin and Greg Bird and, I mean, Ellsbury is old.
Sanchez.
Sanchez, right. Yeah,
Sanchez.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you can afford to have an old man DH.
I think I'm kind of turning around onto your side with this discussion now that I think about it, yeah. Because Encarnacion is not necessarily the worst option. He can play first base.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Right. He could still play in the field. Or if you're a real idiot and you want to play the show like a goof, you could put him at third because he played third a little with the Reds when he came up, I guess.
But yeah, no, that he could make sense. And I mean, I think that a lot of people kind of think about Encarnacion in sort of the same way as David Ortiz. I think he's...
That's racist.
No, I mean, when you think about it, Encarnacion's stats, they kind of fly under the radar, and people do kind of discount him just because he's a DH.
Well,
and
he gets there
in a
weird way.
Lineup.
Like, he always feels like he gets there in a weird way. Like, yeah, no, he had a great year.
Absolutely.
But I don't know what I mean by a weird way. I mean, I guess he's like a lot of home run hitters where he's streaky and like a lot of his home runs are like in bunches. I don't know if that's a weird way, but like it every year it feels like he's underrated. You're absolutely right because it feels like throughout the season it doesn't feel like he's putting up the numbers he is, and then he ends up with like high 30s, low 40 homers.
Yeah, and like
right?
120 RBI.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, you know,
he hits the ball, like Pete Rose
facial
says.
Facial hair, I know. So, that's it. I'm sorry, I was a dick to you. I did challenge you in an aggressive way.
It's okay.
I got to reflect in these next week before our next show. Yo, so tweet at Cap Figure Sports.
At Cap Figure.
Jesus Christ, how do I not even know that? That is friggin' horrible. Tweet at Cap Figure.
And or horrible stats.
Ask us questions. Or horrible stats is my handle. That's what you kids call it, right? A handle?
Handle.
Isn't a handle a thing you like do in college and you try to get girls over with?
Scoop ice cream?
Scoop ice cream. Oh yeah. So that's it. And please leave a review in the podcast app. It's already in your phone, but in your iPhone, and that's it. Goodbye. Try to believe.